We are in Leviticus 18.
Paula, you're on the wrong side.
I know. I switched over here because he had all his stuff piled over there.
Well, you want to switch back?
No, this is fine.
I tend to lean left.
No.
I don't know
here.
Why I'm always leaning to the left. But middle of chapter 18, we finished with verse 18. And going on to verse 19, prohibition against other kinds of unchastity and unnatural crimes. Yay. Okay. What?
Just go.
there is a theme that runs from here through the next chapter. And that is a theme of, if God designed the world a certain way, he's calling the people of Israel to have the flavor of the world as it originally was designed. There will be prohibitions against things that you're thinking, well, what's the point in that? Let me set an idea in front of you. You ever work very hard making a specific dish of food, flavoring it just exactly how you want it, and you bring it out and serve it, and the first thing somebody does is, without tasting it, they grab from the salt shaker or the hot sauce.
Yeah.
And you're saying, but I spent all that time making it just exactly so, and here you're going to run off and do other things with it. There is a bit of the flavor of that that comes in more than in chapter 18, in chapter 19. So when you see some of these, you go and you say to yourself, how did God originally design his creation to be? And he's calling the Israelites to that. And it may not be that it's something that down into the New Testament, anything of this would be wrong. It may not be even that when they get to the promised land, that these things will continue as prohibitions. But this is a little bit of the original, how was it supposed to be? Okay? And then we start reading. Verse 19, you shall not approach a woman to uncover her nakedness while she is in her menstrual uncleanness. Because you wouldn't have had to worry about that if Adam and Eve had not eaten the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, probably. That's my take. Verse 20.
And you shall not lie sexually with your neighbor's wife and so make yourself unclean with her.
Okay. That's kind of obvious. You shall not give any of your children to offer them to Molech and so profane the name of your God. I am Yahweh. Molech was one of the gods of the Canaanites, and the idols of Molech, we do know this, made of metal with distended belly where you can put fire inside from the back and heat it up and make sacrifices and place the sacrifice in the arms of Molech, and then it would fall down into the belly of Molech. And these are horrible things. There is a dispute among the scholars as to whether the Israelites wandering from God did this early on, or whether it was just later. King Manasseh offered one of his children to Molech, and that done outside of Jerusalem in the Valley of Hinnom, which was designated as the Valley of All Unclean Things, where spontaneous combustion also happened. So leading to the word in Hebrew, Gehenna, which is Gehinnom, Valley of Hinnom, interpreted more correctly as the hell of fire than the fire of hell. It is where all of the unclean things are burned up. And you're looking up.
From your uncle's book.
Okay.
About Solomon, he says, it is hard to escape concluding from 1 Kings 11, 4 to 8, that in his later days, Solomon had fallen so far, he actually engaged in idol worship. Astaroth was a fertility goddess whose worshipers engaged in ritual sexual acts. High places, Chemosh and Molech were built on what is now called the Mount of Olives.
Yeah.
The followers of Molech believed that infant sacrifices were sometimes required.
But according to Delitzsch, if the Israelites had actually offered infant sacrifices early on, there would have been a much sharper condemnation among the early prophets. Delitzsch says what more likely happened was passing through the fires of Molech was a dedicatory bit of worship where the child would be dedicated and not be killed. There's also the correction in Delitzsch, and he attempts to do this, saying that it is not likely that the sacrifice would be placed live into the arms of Molech, but be slain and then placed into the arms of Molech. So among the scholars, there is this dispute. Solomon built temples and altars to foreign and false gods because as a part of his foreign policy, he made alliances, and the alliances involved taking one of the daughters of a foreign king to be one of his wives. And then that daughter comes along with certain demands to be allowed to worship her god. So like the embassies of foreign countries have their foreign territory as the embassy. So in Washington, D.C., the Chinese embassy grounds are actually seen as territory of China. It is ceded to China for the duration of the embassy being located there. You walk into the embassy, you are on foreign soil. Likewise with our embassies in foreign countries. So Solomon building altars and temples to foreign gods would be following that line of reasoning. And of course it corrupted him and corrupted the people of Jerusalem. But you have to realize how he got to that point. And you know, what's paved with good intentions?
The road to hell.
Yeah. Okay. But there's not a lot of dispute as to whether the Canaanites were practicing human sacrifice. We have depictions and carvings and such, one of them depicts a king in a city under siege, killing his son and throwing him over the wall. And that as a sacrifice. The Canaanites, and let's just say it straight up, they were twisted, badly so. But the second part of that verse, and so profane the name of your God, how does that profane the name of God to make a sacrifice to a different God? And for that, the definition of the word profane actually is to make common. So it is to bring God down onto the level of the many gods. And if God is just one of many gods, then you have demoted God and you have profaned his name. Okay. Let's do verse 22.
Do not lie with a man as one lies with a woman. That is detestable.
Okay. And aside from everything else, remember the whole theme of this is God's creation. And he wants the Israelites to observe his pattern of creation. And what is the purpose of sex?
Create life.
Yeah. Or the way I phrase it with the confirmands, it's to make hundreds and hundreds and thousands and millions of tiny little human beings. And making tiny little human beings is a part of the work of God. So, yay, tiny little human beings. Verse 23, and you shall not lie with an animal, and so make yourself unclean with it. Neither shall any woman give herself to an animal to lie with it. It is a perversion. And that also was a part of the Canaanite worship, believe it or not. Because if your God was a goat God, well, then
you got to hook up with the goat.
If you're twisted and logical about it, you'll go there. But
ew.
Yeah.
But human beings are to be distinct in creation. We are not just smart animals. We are not of a common descent with the animals. God in Genesis says, let the earth bring forth, but then he forms Adam, and then he creates Eve personally and separate from the rest of creation. 24.
Do not make yourselves unclean by any of these things, but by all these, the nations I am driving out before you have become unclean.
Yep. And the land became unclean, so that I punished its iniquity, and the land vomited out its inhabitants. Well, that's it's an anthropomorphism. And the land vomited them out. And so nature rebels. Nature itself rebels against many of these practices. And things happen to those who practice them. Verse 26.
You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments and shall not commit any of these abominations, either any of your own nation or any stranger who dwells among you.
Mm-hmm. For the people of the land who were before you did all of these abominations so that the land became unclean. Verse 28.
And if you defile the land, it will vomit you out as it vomited out the nations that were before you.
Yeah. For everyone who does any of these abominations, the persons who do them shall be cut off from among their people. Verse 30.
Keep my requirements and do not follow any of the detestable customs that were practiced before you came, and do not defile yourselves with them. I am the Lord your God.
Okay. I've got one note that's up. Wait, what? Delitzsch details. Lying with animals was connected in Egypt with the worship of the goat at Mendes, especially where the woman lay down before he goats. Aelian relates an account of the crime being also committed with a dog in Rome. And according to Sonnini, and this is mid-1800s, but get this. According to Sonnini, in modern Egypt, men are said to lie even with female crocodiles.
Ooh.
What? What?
That's a prickly situation.
Yeah, no way.
Oh my gosh.
How far off?
Golly. I'd be afraid of those big teeth.
Yeah. That's where we get the phrase, don't let it bite you in the air.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Wow.
Wild.
People got to be crazy.
Yeah. We're into chapter 19. Yay.
Yeah.
Well, let's see.
Let's leave that one.
And the Lord spoke to Moses saying, verse 2.
Speak to all the congregation of the children of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy.
Now, which definition of shall is that? Is it you must or you will?
Holy because I
must
say to them. Be
holy. Well, he knows we can't be holy.
I don't know.
Is will future tense?
And that's a thing with all of the Ten Commandments. You shall or you shall not. Will there be a time when? And as I taught in confirmation just this last week, if you look at the last verse of Matthew chapter 5, you find Jesus saying, you must be holy as your heavenly Father is holy. And is that a demand or is it an action plan for Jesus?
That's an action plan.
Well, my version says be holy. It doesn't say you shall or you must. It just says be holy.
Mm-hmm.
And, which and, is
do a or do not. There is no try.
Well, there is a try under the law, and then under the gospel, there is a you will. And so it's a both. One of those tricky things that's a both. Mm. When you read the Ten Commandments, remember that it is a both. That not only is there God's demand that you cannot meet, but there is God's action plan that he will do on his own. And the Father's will is that we should be conformed to the likeness of his Son so that he might become the firstborn among many brethren. Romans chapter 8. And yeah. So, meanwhile, God begins to lay down certain commandments. And Delitzsch says these commandments are grouped together rather according to a loose association of ideas than according to any logical arrangement. I disagree. And watch this logical arrangement, because it's there. And in my mind, somewhat obviously there. And the first comment I have on it is the fourth commandment, which is in verse 3, the first part of verse 3, that's fourth commandment to honor father and mother. The fourth commandment is a gateway between the two tables of the law, and it is a gateway into the commandments. It's an entry point for God to begin to teach his people about himself and about life and about everything. And the reason why the fourth commandment is that way, fourth commandment, Luther says, is the head of the second table of the law, just like the first commandment is the head of the whole commandments. That means all of the commandments are bound up in the first commandment. And if you keep the first commandment, you keep all of the commandments. So Luther says, fourth commandment is the head of the second table. If you keep the fourth commandment, you keep all of the second table. Why is that? Explanation of the fourth commandment, Luther's catechism, we should fear and love God so that we do not despise or anger our parents and other authorities, but honor them, serve and obey them, and love and cherish them. And it's when you get to and other authorities that it becomes all-encompassing for this life. Luther also says that the fourth commandment is a mirror of the first commandment, because father and mother carry the image of God in our lives. They're the ones through whom we receive our earthly blessings more than anything else. And then the expansion through and other authorities regards all the authorities, all of the earthly people through whom we receive our blessings. They are mirrors and images of God through whom he will give his blessings. There are certain number of direct blessings that do not have a human being involved in bringing that blessing. There are tons and tons of mediated blessings. You receive the blessing of the bread on your table through how many people were involved in that? From the farmer to the grocer to the trucker to the seed corn company or the seed company to the tractor makers, to the designers, to the builders, to the workmen on the plant, to the petroleum industry folks that make the fuel, and on and on and on. So mediated blessings. And it's for that reason that the fourth commandment becomes a gateway into all of the blessings that come from God. It's an excellent place to start in order to take people from their day-to-day experience and bring them into an understanding of how all of that relates to God. So now we have to read verse 3. Every one of you shall revere his mother and his father. Interesting, the mother comes first in this one.
Hey.
Yeah.
We get top billing, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. That's because we're with them more.
And that actually, that's not a bad observation, because the more immediate experience of the blessings coming from parents, the more immediate is with the mother. And then you realize, well, dad's going off to work, so. And that becomes an additional experience, and then all of the other things. Second part of the verse, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. So the Sabbath is the time to set aside to realize that all of our life is lived in connection with and relationship with God. So fourth commandment, third commandment, verse 4.
Do not turn to idols or make gods of cast metal for yourselves. I am the Lord, your God.
Mm-hmm. That's first commandment adjunct, and Exodus 20, verse 2. Actually, Exodus 20, verse 2 is at the tail end of verse 3. And at the tail end of verse 4, I am the Lord your God, how's that extend? Who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. The introduction into the commandments. Do not make idols, do not turn to idols, you shall have no other gods. The adjunct, don't make for yourself any graven image. And then we get to verse 5. When you offer a sacrifice of peace offerings to the Lord, you shall offer it so that you may be accepted. And now we are into worship again. Second commandment, calling upon the name of God. And then the third commandment, how to do the worship. Verse 6.
It shall be eaten the same day you offer it, and on the next day, and if any remains until the third day, it shall be burned in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, am I in the right place?
Yes.
You are.
Okay.
Regulations for worship. That's related to third commandment. If it is eaten at all on the third day, it is tainted, it will not be accepted. God has the right to decide how we are to worship him. Third commandment. And then verse 8.
Whoever eats it will be held responsible because he has desecrated what is holy to the Lord. That person must be cut off from his people.
Okay. Desecrated. Pull the term apart. Desacredized. Or another translation is profaned, which by definition is made common, not separated out. And so he's treated the things of worship as just another part of the everyday whatever, whatever. And we are again to the third commandment. Where should we go next? We started with the fourth commandment. Where next? Verse 9. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge, neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. You know which commandment that is? But help and befriend him in every physical need.
Oh, love your neighbor? No. No.
We should fear and love God so that we may not hurt or harm our neighbor in his body, but help and befriend him in every physical need. And that is Luther's explanation to the fifth commandment, you shall not murder. Because when you expand that commandment into what it is all about, the numerous things that it is saying, don't go there, but then also the heart of the commandment, how shall we help and befriend our neighbor? And there's numerous things at the center. One of them is when you harvest your field, leave the gleanings for the poor. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Fifth commandment. Verse 10.
And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God.
Oh, let's link that back into Exodus 20, verse 2. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And so all of these things come from that. Okay. And it is for the poor and for the sojourner. Well, let's see. We did fourth, third, Exodus 20, verse 2, first, second, third, fifth, where to go next? Oh, wait, in chapter 18, we did the sixth commandment. Oh, we don't need to do that anymore, do we? So what's next? Seventh commandment.
You shall not steal.
You shall not steal. You shall not deal falsely. You shall not lie to one another. Verse 12.
And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord.
We're drifting toward the end of the seventh, kind of into the eighth commandment, not to bear false witness, but this is more closely related still to the seventh commandment, you shall not steal, because of verse 13, you shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him. The wages of a hired worker shall not remain with you all night until the morning. You pay when pay is due, and you don't delay your paying, because the worker is worthy of his wages, and because you shall not steal, and you shall not keep it in the bank and earn an extra day's interest before you turn it over to the one who worked for you, who to whom it is due. And do not tell him that you're going to pay him and then fail to pay him. That is theft. So that's the part of the swear falsely. And verse 14.
You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear your God. I am the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And we're relating all kinds of things. There's a little bit of the fifth, a little bit of the seventh, a little bit of the eighth commandment in there. And it's going very smoothly through the progression. This is why I think Delitzsch is wrong. This is not just random ordering by association of themes. This is very neatly laid out to teach the people of Israel, bringing them in through the fourth commandment and running them through all of the commandments. And then we get to verse 15. Where we truly get into the eighth commandment. You shall do no injustice in court. You shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great, but in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. You don't tip the scales of justice in favoritism either toward the poor or toward the rich. You deal honestly and straightforwardly and in matters of truth. If a poor man steals his neighbor's sheep to make a nice Passover dinner, he's still broken the law. If a rich man steals his neighbor's sheep, it doesn't matter how rich he is and how much he offers to pay you off. He has still broken the law. And that equal scales of justice is very important so that everyone in the nation knows where they stand before God. Where are we? Oh, verse 16.
You shall not go around as a slanderer among your people, and you shall not stand up against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord.
Yeah.
It likely needs an extra
brain. Somebody have a radio on or something?
Yeah. Somebody has a radio on. Can you mute your mic?
They're talking about Medicare. And somebody
not me.
While we're sorting that out, back in back to
Deb, you're lit up. It's like it's yours. Is it yours?
Me?
Yeah.
Me? Deb? Which Deb?
Deb.
Mine? Could it be? Wait a minute.
Nope, okay. I got nothing going on.
No.
Back in verse 4, when he said, do not turn to idols or make for yourselves any gods of cast metal. The word gods there is Elilim, a variation on the term Elohim, but Elilim actually means not gods or nothings. And it's one of these terms of derision that is in the Old Testament toward the false gods. They are nothings. So, meanwhile, we finished verse 18, didn't we?
18 to 18.
No, we're on 17.
We're on 17.
Oh, okay. Yes, you're right. 17 gets us into the end of the commandments and matters of the heart, which, can you summarize the ninth commandment and the 10th commandment in 4 words? You shall not
covet.
Covet, exactly. So it's matters of the heart. Verse 17, you shall not hate your brother in your heart, but you shall reason frankly with your neighbor, lest you incur sin because of him. And verse 18,
you shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord.
What's the opposite of covet? And the answer is contentment. The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places, says Psalm 16. I have a goodly inheritance, and that to be our mood and understanding of our lot in life, no matter what our lot in life is. Contentment with the blessings that God has given, which is the real answer to any covetousness. And when that is our attitude, then we are not bearing grudges and hating our neighbor and our brother in the faith, because God has been good. He has been good to each of us, no matter what we have been through. God is good. So we finish the tour through the commandments, and then there is the section from here to the end of the chapter that has to do very specifically with how to live in this world, where God says, this is the pattern of my creation. Enjoy the apple pie as I made it. Don't slather it with all kinds of other stuff before you taste it. Okay? That's just my take.
Well, it does say in Psalms, taste and see that the Lord is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another illustration. We got a hold of, what do you call them? Heritage tomatoes?
Heirloom.
Yeah. That we grew in our garden. Purple Cherokee. And love them because the flavor profile is so much more dramatic than the store-bought tomatoes, you know, those cardboard things. And so we gave some to somebody else, and her daughter tasted them because she doesn't like tomatoes, but she tasted them, and it's like, oh, that's what tomatoes are supposed to taste like? What did the first tomato in the Garden of Eden tastes like? Imagine that. What did the first peach off the peach tree in the Garden of Eden taste like? And that's the thing to think about as you go through the rest of this chapter. So verse 19, you shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle breed with a different kind. Cattle means livestock. You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seed. Don't let them cross fertilize. Nor shall you wear a garment of cloth made of two kinds of material. You know, there is a thing to be said about receiving things as they were planned to be. And then we go on, other stuff.
Oh, with the two kinds of material, the footnote says, because the priests wore fabric of mixed yarn, others were forbidden to wear similar clothing to avoid spiritual ambiguity. In other words, it was ceremonial to wear two different kinds of yarn or two different kinds of cloth.
Right, which would bring down their clothing and profane it. It would make it common. And you didn't want to do that. Right?
Right.
That's part of it. Verse 20.
If a man sleeps with a woman who is a slave girl promised to another man, but who has not yet been ransomed or given her freedom, there must be due punishment.
Okay. They shall not be put to death because she was not free, but he shall bring his compensation to the Lord, to the entrance of the tent of meeting, a ram for a guilt offering. Verse 22.
And he shall make atonement for him with the ram of the trespass offering before the Lord for his sin which he has committed, and the sin which he has committed shall be forgiven him.
And I don't know how to sort that one out.
What happens?
Neither does Dalich.
What happens to the slave girl? The note here says ambiguous case.
We don't know the details.
Right.
And we haven't sussed out what the cultural situation was that may have given rise to setting that down. So there are just some things that, yeah, I'm going to have to look into it further.
It also says that they shall not be put to death.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, maybe. So if he raped her,
if he was free, like,
there was a chance.
She's promised or, to another man. She's a slave. She has no say, but she falls in love with a young man. You know what I mean? They actually fall in love, like in The King and I. Remember?
Oh, so she's a willing participant. And
I'm thinking, yeah, maybe that's how I read it. Like,
yeah, and there's too many variations to be able to sort them out.
Right. She's a slave. She doesn't say she promised herself. She's a slave, so she has no say. So she's promised.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's how I read it. But
the next one's a bit more interesting. When you come into the land and plant any kind of tree for food, then you shall regard its fruit as forbidden. 3 years it shall be forbidden to you. It must not be eaten. Verse 24.
And in the fourth year, all its fruit shall be holy, an offering of praise to the Lord.
But in the fifth year, you may eat of its fruit to increase its yield for you. I am the Lord your God. And practical matters, fruit does not bear real well in the first few years. And the tree has to have the ability to develop and grow before it reaches its full potential. But also leave it be for a little while. And then when the harvest The first harvest goes to God.
You shall not eat any flesh with the blood in it. You shall not interpret omens or tell fortunes.
I do have some notes on that.
Mine says, do not practice divination or sorcery.
To practice no kinds of incantations and the nahash, nikhash, from nahash, to whisper, or from the word nahash, a serpent, literally to prophesy from observing snakes.
Sounds like Barseltongue, doesn't it?
Yep. Then to prophesy, then it's expanded to prophesy from auguries generally. And an augury is to observe the innards of an animal or the behavior of an animal and try and tell the future by that. Because don't you know, the future is bound up in the things that happen. Or you can try and prophesy from the motion of the clouds. The rabbis maintain that the word for prophesy generally here, ayin, from an eye, literally to ogle, then it becomes to bewitch with an evil eye. You know the phrase, the evil eye, give someone the evil eye.
I give my children it all the time.
And to go back in history, there actually was the belief that some people could give the evil eye and then bad things would happen to you. Yeah, we'll go into that after we're done recording. Verse 27.
You shall not round off the hair on your temples or mar the edges of your beard.
What could that mean? Well, no Delitzsch.
Bowl cuts.
No, Delitzsch talks just about those that cut the hair in a circle from one temple to the other, as some of the Arab tribes did, according to Herodotus, in honor of their god, Oratal, whom he identifies with the Dionysus of the Greeks. In Jeremiah, the persons who did this are called round-cropped from their peculiar tonsure. Corners of the beard, Pliny records some of the Arabs to have done this. So very often in the ancient world, the style of haircut marked you as a devotee of a particular god. And the Israelites were not to do that.
I can't picture this haircut at all. Yeah. I'm picturing Martin Luther's thing like this.
I think I've had it before.
I think I've given it to my kids before.
I'm sitting here thinking mullet.
Mullet?
It says circular, though. I'm seriously picturing Martin Luther's weird hair.
Yeah.
That goes around like this.
Yeah.
And they did that in the Middle Ages. Yeah. And part of it was
shame on Martin Luther. Part
so that the hair was like that, kind of a hair halo.
Is that what they call a bowl haircut? Maybe, perhaps.
Yeah, except it's bald up here.
Mm-hmm. Well, they just wanted to hide the fact they were balding, and then when they started to bald, they still were in style.
Yeah, okay. verse 28.
Do not cut your body.
You shall not make any cuts.
Oh, go ahead. Do not cut your bodies for the dead, or put tattoo marks on yourselves. I am the Lord.
Okay, there's two very different things there. The cutting was very often done in mourning for a dead relative, And you know, that still is done in our day, strangely enough.
Cutting
custom of scratching the arms, hands, and face, and the prohibition of tattooing. There's no reference to any idolatry there, but it was to teach once again a respect for God's creation as he made it, which includes your body. And this is Garden of Eden imagery. Keep the thing as you received it. Don't bring out the salt shaker for that dish that's been placed before you so carefully made.
Yes, Randy, quit.
Or the hot sauce. which everybody knows what that's all about. Time for you. Do not profane your daughter by making her a prostitute. What? Lest the land fall into prostitution and the land become full of depravity. What?
Temple prostitutes.
Who would do that?
If they needed money or money. Food or property or whatever.
Yeah, but
use their daughters.
Who would do that? It's
Canaanites.
Comment on the sadness of our fallen nature. Verse 30.
I mean, what's terrible too is that do not degrade your daughter by making her a prostitute. It's one thing if a woman decides to do it, but to have your father tell you to go do it, that would be horrible.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. It's one of the most horrifying things. How far had they fallen? How far have we fallen? It makes you want to cry.
It does.
Verse 30.
Observe my Sabbath.
You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary.
Okay. So somehow we have wandered back to the third commandment, the Sabbath and the sanctuary. Why have we wandered back there? Because all of these things that we went out into, thinking about the various things in life and where things have gone wrong, God calls us back to life in connection with him. Remember what the Sabbath day is. It is from us a recognition that God has created us, and our time and our life and our everything come from him. And from God's perspective, the Sabbath day is the day that he was going to spend with Adam and Eve, rejoicing in the goodness of his creation, the Sabbath that he is still waiting to have with the whole human race, the Sabbath that then is fulfilled in Revelation 21. Now the dwelling of God is with man, and he will be their God, and they will be his people. And then you have the tree of life and the river of the water of life, and there's your Sabbath, finally. So that is what God calls us back to, life in relationship with him. And then reverence my sanctuary. Well, yeah, that's a part of the Sabbath. And then the last part of that verse, I am the Lord. And you should hear it echoing in your minds. I am the Lord.
Out of slavery.
Yeah. And that whenever God says that, you know, very often poetry means you leave something unsaid so that it may echo in the minds of the hearer. And there is a bit of that in the way this is done.
Is that why Jesus lost it with the money changers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like that was the last straw. They're just,
yeah.
You know, you guys are a hot mess outside, but don't bring it in here.
This is the place of God's dwelling with man. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, it's been a tradition in Missouri Synod congregations that we do not allow two things. Advertisement or selling in the church proper, or political things to be placed anywhere in the church. It's just, we do not do that because this place is set aside. It is the place for God and his kingdom. And none of that stuff from outside should enter in. I've observed that time and time again in my ministry, and time again, people have wanted to cross that line. Can we sell youth group stuff?
In the church?
Can we have kids line up, and as people leave the sanctuary, there at the doors, they will sell and try and raise money? No. Take it outside. Or
a separate time.
During the last election, somebody put stickers for a candidate in the church. Those came down because this is the place for God. Simply, only, period. So that's part of reverencing his sanctuary, that it is a set apart place. Need to go on. Verse 31, do not turn to mediums or necromancers. Do not seek them out and so make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. And part of the thing of this was that there were those that would try and contact the spirits of those who had died so that they could receive prophecies about the future. And I wrote in the column in the book, and why exactly would the dead know the future?
Exactly.
And something missing in the reasoning and thinking there. Mm-hmm. How would they know the future? They might know the past. You could follow the logic and say, maybe they have messages for their loved ones left behind. I love you and give to your cousin this thing that you think you inherited, whatnot. But, you know, and all of that's wrong. But going beyond that, why would they know the future? What part of your dead don't you get?
I always thought, why try to pull back mm-hmm. the spirit into the world?
Yeah,
you know,
there is that too. But this has to do very specifically with so they can tell you the future and make prophecies, which that's just nuts. That's not thinking.
But well, who visited the spiritist? Was it
Saul?
And yeah. he. Whether it was really the spirit or not of, was it
Solomon,
Abraham or Ezekiel or whatever?
Saul.
But who, but when they
and the necromancer called up supposedly the ghost of Samuel.
Samuel, and he said, why are you bothering me?
Yeah, and basically it's, you'll be down here with me. Wait, what? Yeah. Where's, yeah. Samuel's not down there. We suspect in all kinds of, this doesn't add up, that it was a lie.
It's a demon.
Satan. It's a doorway for Satan.
That's right. Father of lies. He'll lie that he's a ghost.
Yeah. He's very good at it. The lying part. Okay. But your expectation of the future should be with who? How's the verse end? I am
the Lord your God.
Mm-hmm. And there's a reference to the past in I am the Lord your God. Verse 32. Hey, what commandment does this bring us back to? Verse 32, someone?
Rise in the presence of the aged. Show respect for the elderly and revere your God. I am the Lord.
What commandment is that?
Fourth.
Yep. We got back to their authority.
Yep, the authority.
Mm-hmm. So we entered through the fourth and then through the third, and we're finishing with the third and then with the fourth. Hmm. 33, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall do him no wrong. Verse 34.
You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
Amen. Don't put them in cages at the border.
What? Who brought you out of Egypt?
the silent echo going on there. You shall do no wrong in judgment in measures of length or weight or quantity. Verse 36.
You shall have just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Mm-hmm. Said the whole thing that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you shall observe all my statutes and all my rules and do them. I am the Lord. So we finish that. And it's fascinating how it all relates to who you are because of who God is and what he has done for you. Little detail. Part of it was... people would have one set of weights for buying and another set of weights for selling. yeah, you would buy with the light weights and sell with the heavy weights. And so cheat your neighbor. And
put your finger on the scale.
So that was just a tail on, toss that in, that part. But that finishes up with chapter 19. And then chapter 20 has to do with, hey, what kind of punishments for all these things?